Unlabeled Leadership is a volunteer service. We appreciate our guests for their stewardship and remarkable stories. We also appreciate listeners like you who back the show with star reviews and contributions.
Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 160, Jenny Clark Encourages Fundamental Listening. Here's a shout out to listeners in Fiji, Southern Hong Kong, Lindbergh, Netherlands, and in the United States, Superior, Wisconsin, Newport News, Virginia, and Salem, Oregon. With that, let's get started. Jenny Clark strives to help people gain self-awareness, leverage their experiences, and align their competencies with their desired future. She is a conscious leadership expert with more than 3 decades of experience in executive recruiting, talent management, and commercial real estate. She's passionate about helping individuals and organizations build cultures rooted in conscious choices and personal accountability. She authored the book Career Mapping, Charting Your Course in the New World of Work, and she hosts the podcast Five Dimensional Leadership. She holds an MBA from Northwest University, Kellogg School of Management, and a BA in French and Linguistics from the University of California at Davis. Jenny is someone you want to get to know. Part 1, What Do You Want? One of the leadership principles I talk about and write about is called Connect with Others. To do this, you need to understand what people are thinking and even feeling, and helping them be able to express themselves. This in turn enables you to support them and help them develop mentally and morally. In this story, Jenny shares something her father said that has helped her with connecting with other people. Here's Jenny to explain.
I had 2 amazing parents. My father and I were especially close. He was a prison warden, superintendent of a correctional facility in California and across the state as he moved up. When I started my professional career after business school, well, even throughout college, he would call me every single Sunday morning. He was my coach until he died in the early 90s. So he had had me and my brother when he was older. And so I lost him when I was in my 30s, but he was so influential. I always look forward to those Sunday mornings to be able to talk to him and my mother, but they came on separately so that I could talk to Dad about business issues. And he offered me some really wonderful advice. That's what really one of the things that I wanted to share.
I love hearing stories about parents, teachers, people with your upbringing who share stories and influences that shape the way you think about work, about life, and who you are.
Yeah. What he said was, and the specific context was that I had been working for a corporate real estate services firm a few years out of graduate school. I was frustrated in my role and I wanted to move up. And I just was like, I don't know what to do, Dad. What should I do? And he said, Jenny, tell people what you want. I kind of thought, I can do that. It's like, I've always been kind of bold. But I was in my 20s, African-American woman, the 3rd African-American this firm had ever hired. I wasn't timid, but I certainly didn't know some of those dynamics in terms of charting my career and the role in which the organization, your employer plays in ideally helping you continue to grow and develop. And so lo and behold, I did tell my manager that I wanted to explore a different role. I had been in the first role for a couple of years, and I think I had established a level of credibility. And I said, I'd really like to move out of this into something else. And he said, okay, well, you know, noted. Let's see what we can make happen. No commitment. But 6 months later, I was given a new opportunity, and it shifted the direction of my career. And so I've always reminded people of that because it's so critically important that, you know, people assume that somebody knows what you're thinking. And that's really pretty silly, you know, especially in a work environment where there are lots of different people who have very different motives and objectives and goals. This was a great learning for me, as I say, one that I've shared many, many times over.
What I find amazing when working in teams or within groups or in a corporation, you'll assume that I guess I should speak from my perspective. I would assume that I had so much room for taking action or expressing myself. But with a lot of people, you find out that you've limited yourself more than what's real.
That's exactly right. In order to tell somebody what you want, you need to know.
Well, yeah, that helps.
Right? And I think a lot of people don't pause to ask themselves. Very often we force ourselves into asking that when we're unhappy, right? What's going to make me happier? And it doesn't need to be that way. You can ask, what do I want? And because I believe that we all have the ability to achieve what it is that we want. We have to be intentional and deliberate and be able to express it. Because I do also believe that most people want to help you achieve that. So therein lies the goodness of it. And I also believe the universe wants that for everyone. We all should be entitled to what we want and to have that, presuming it's for the good of all, presuming it's a well-intentioned, benevolent thing. It just was a really powerful thing. As I moved out of that world of real estate into executive recruiting, that became something that I would share with so many other people. And it also became really important for the reason that I just mentioned, that you need to know what you want. Because I think a lot of people don't know, and they think that they should just be in a role that they've gone to school for, or these other sort of limiting beliefs. As a consequence, I think our organizations are sub-optimizing a lot of the talent in their organizations because they haven't asked, the individuals haven't felt entitled to assert and tell people. And so you've got this gold that's sitting around in the form of talent. If they came to understand that they have the ability and the agency to ask, and or the organization is asking, what do you want? How can we make you happier? Then I think the world is going to look a lot different and be a lot better.
Yeah, that's really interesting the way you phrase that. It's not just you're an employee, you should ask for what you want, but it's also if you have employees, asking them, what do you want?
Yes.
And getting that feedback. You're so right. We cannot read other people's minds, but assuming what they're thinking and feeling is a terrible mistake.
It is a terrible mistake. Frankly, I think that's the reason why we have the Great Resignation right now. From everything I've read, most people leave their jobs because of their bosses.
Yeah.
I would argue that probably the common theme is that the boss didn't engage the employee in a way that they felt valued, safe, challenged, any of those things. To me, the Great Resignation has been a good thing and a wake-up call for organizations to begin to start asking and to tap into the humanity of this talent. Their people aren't commodities. They have families and dreams and hopes. And so the simple task or the simple act of asking someone, where do you think you want to go with this, can open up a whole new world for everybody.
You're so right. And with the pandemic, there was such a huge missed opportunity with employers, with people who manage other people, to really take that experience and value and express concern about the health and welfare of the people they work with and find out how they're doing, what their challenges are. When that didn't happen, it opened up an opportunity for people to sit and say, is this really what I want?
That's right. That to me is the best thing that can happen for an individual, and that accrues to the benefit of the organization. I read a statistic from Society of Human Resources that said that 1 in 4 employees dreads going to work. Dread, that's their word. 25% of our workforce doesn't want to be there. I think it's a bigger number than that because they're saying dread. I think there's a continuum before you get to actively wants to be there. There's a whole lot of room for neutrality, right? That's inexcusable and it's fixable.
You're right. It's not just 25%. It's also including the percentage of people, I just started doing keynotes about this, who are at work and are happy, but they're not engaged and they're not as productive. And I'm sure you've seen the surveys where you have actively disengaged, not engaged, and engaged.
Yeah.
And if people think that not engaged is okay, they are not being as productive and aren't applying their talents as well as they could be if you engage them.
That's right. And I read something recently too that said that habits are contagious.
Yes.
And when I think about teams having other people around them to whatever degree who are not engaged, if nothing else, it's going to build a level of resentment.
Yeah.
Because it's like, here, I'm showing up. I want to do something. And you're sitting over there, Debbie Downer, just dreading being here. It's pulling the whole team down. You know, I often say water seeks its own level, Pascal's principle. So we need to lift all boats and get everybody activated to know what they want and to share and articulate what it is that they want.
The worst is when people quit and stay.
That's right. That's right. Just taking up space. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They do the bare minimum to not be noticed.
That's right. I hold managers and leaders responsible for that. That's simply, to me, that's what they're there to do, is to activate, to keep people inspired. Now, we're all have free will, but we have this organizational structure for a reason, and it's intended to try to get the most out of the people who are there, who have these skills that the rest of our society has supported them in achieving. You go to school, you do these things, and here you are, you have this job and you pay taxes. You're giving something in exchange for that. And that's your thought leadership, your mind, your creativity. And to the extent that the organization, the leaders and managers in that organization are not tapping into that, it's shared responsibility. This isn't about blame, but I just think we need stronger leaders and managers who really want to master and demonstrate those capabilities. It's not enough to be a smart domain expert. You have to have managerial and leadership competencies, and you should be held accountable for those and incentivized for those things so that you can get the best out of people. Everybody wins in that scenario.
Yeah, you're so right. And then you have all the managers who have quit and stayed as well, which just kind of amps it up even more.
That's right. Yeah, they're taking up space that other people who are really motivated, you know, could operate in.
Yeah, I talked to a VP at a large international organization. He was telling me that his managers are so stressed right now because mm-hmm. they have a few things going on. They have resentful employees that mm-hmm. are vocal, making demands that like they've never had to deal with before. And they feel like they're caught between the company and trying to get people to do their jobs. Then there's this fear among the managers that everyone's going to quit at some point.
Yeah. But I think that's where some of the same fundamental communication that I'm talking about, you know, that simple thing that my father told me of tell people what you want, hasn't been cultivated and encouraged among leadership. Namely, if you've got people making demands, can you get a few of them together and say, okay, look, we've just come through one of the biggest shifts in our civilization in eons. Namely the global pandemic.
Yeah.
There's a lot that nobody knows in terms of how this is all going to work going forward. No one has it figured out, including me, including the top leadership of our organization. But here's what we do know. We value you, and we want to try to honor your wishes to the extent that they can be compatible with those of the rest of the organization. We're not on an island. We're part of something bigger. We're part of a collective. So there needs to be some compromises. And we want your input and your ideas. It doesn't have to be either or. It should be a both and. So let's together come up with some solutions that can work for all of us.
If you have employees that feel cared for, that feel valued, that feel like even just listened to.
That's it.
It changes everything.
It does.
Part two. Quality feedback involves inquiring, listening, and caring. Another leadership principle I write about is called encourage growth. One way to be able to do this is by providing quality feedback to help others understand their performance, but from a different perspective. Jenny shares a story about giving feedback to her direct reports and indirect reports when she worked at Google. Again, here's Jenny.
When I led a team at Google, I had three concurrent teams. Two I built and stood up for them, one in the diversity space, one in the internal mobility. And then I took over a team of recruiters that were already inside the organization.
You had three teams that you were managing simultaneously?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
They were small. I mean, the first two were three people, four people, and then it all came up to, 30, another 20-something folks of recruiters. It was great because I know the space intimately, and I hearken back to my dad because he was an amazing leader. You know, he had learned some of these real basic tenets that he had shared with me because of what he had paid attention to people. He respected people. He garnered trust from folks. He was a true leader. And so when I became this leader of these three teams, I attempted to emulate some of the things that I watched and heard him do. When it came time for performance evaluation, I always sat in on everybody, all 30 people. I had 6 direct reports. I gave them theirs, but I wanted to sit in on the ones that they were doing with their direct reports.
You were a manager of managers.
That's right.
You were in the meetings when they did performance reviews. You sat in as well.
I did because I wanted to. I knew all of these folks, but I wasn't as intimate and intimately involved in their activities as their direct manager was. I also wanted to kind of assess the manager to see the extent to which and the way in which they were providing feedback for these folks and to pose a few questions myself. And very often I found myself asking, what are you thinking about as a next move? I wanted to make sure we took up that entire half hour, which isn't that much time. I'd had conversations that lasted 10 minutes with my managers, with people, right, to whom I reported. And so I wanted to make sure that I was giving them a robust opportunity for an exchange. It wasn't just here's your score and here's your compensation and good job or wow, not so good. I really wanted it to be meaningful. But in 2 cases with my directs over the time that I was there, I had them cry based on some of the constructive, we can call it negative. They took it as negative feedback that I gave them. Now, I had been holding weekly one-on-ones and I had talked about this. I'm certain of it. And they acknowledged that later. Here's the interesting thing. To a person, both people came back to me the day after that review and said, I'm sorry, I lost it. I said, it's okay. I get it. It's an emotional time. Google is a company of a lot of A students, people very high achieving. They said, you know, I talked to my partner about it and you were right. Like, I don't need to be right. I just want you to understand. They said, I thought about what you said. I get it. And they said, I know that you gave me that feedback because you care. And that meant the world to me because that was the spirit in which I was giving it and that I had been giving it all year that they didn't necessarily want to hear because they got so wrapped up in the organizational wide swirl of these performance evaluations that just causes everybody to get very raw.
I love that phrase. The spirit of the feedback is I care.
Yes.
It's like if people realize, even ahead of time, you say, the reason I'm giving you this feedback is because I care about you. I want you to be successful. I want you to grow and develop. Here's some hard information you need to hear so you can do that. And I'm going to support you throughout your career and improving in these 1 or 2 areas.
That's right.
With those 2 people, did that happen?
Absolutely. One of them ultimately left. I don't remember how much time transpired. Within the year, she left and moved to Nashville to become a singer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because I don't remember exactly my words to her, but some of it was, look, how committed are you to this work? And I'm saying that because I want you to be able to answer that question. And if you can't, then you probably shouldn't be doing this work. You might do it perfectly adequately elsewhere, or maybe your heart is telling you you should be doing something else, which was the case with her.
You may have inadvertently inspired a future Hall of Fame singer in country music. Who knows?
That's right.
I'm assuming it was country.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah.
Part 3, activate the good in others. Leadership is about helping others mature mentally and morally. In other words, helping them build character. We do this through small acts, such as asking the right questions, which can bring out the good behaviors in others. Jenny advises how we can do this in one particular way. Here's Jenny.
I'll go back to my father's phrase of tell people what you want and ask others what they want and need. Especially during this time in a hopefully soon to be post-COVID environment where we're struggling to figure out how are we going to work together and all people. I'm not just talking about leaders giving to their direct reports. I think you alluded to the fact, and I've read statistics that say that leaders and managers are suffering greatly right now too from a stress. There's a lot of mental health concerns among these folks. I think they feel the weight of the world is on them. And I hope that they begin to understand that as a leader, you don't have to have all the answers. it's a great opportunity for you to engage your teams to activate their insights and their awareness and their feelings to find a new solution, the likes of which we may have never seen before. To me, we're on the verge of a major shift in our entire civilization that can be unifying and love-filled. And I sound like Pollyanna, but I believe this. It's time for some goodness. And I think we just need to activate the good in one another by asking, how are you? And saying, I care about you. Similarly, I'm struggling, if that's the case, and I need help. We're all in this together. If COVID showed us anything, it reminded us of the fragility of our humanity and our need for love and high regard and respect of one another.
When you say tell people what they want or what they need, it's more than just a career. It's,
yeah,
I need more feedback. I need you to say hi to me. I need to feel like I'm here and that you
care. I need to know you care.
Yeah. And that could be a manager talking, just like you said. It's like, guys, I acknowledge me too, you know?
Yes. We're all human.
Yeah. It goes both ways. Definitely.
It does. I think we forget that. I think we've been so programmed to honor the hierarchy. And I think that's being redefined, because I think there's a lot of room for doing things differently, but it requires a new way of communicating that is forthright, from the heart, empathetic, and true.
You just reminded me of a past episode with Patrick Ward. He doesn't know it, but he's become one of my heroes just because this little tiny thing he did, which was when the pandemic started, he would meet with them daily and ask them, how are you doing? Not to talk about work, but to make sure that they're okay, that they can express whatever they're experiencing with the pandemic. And he said after a year of that, when it came time for performance reviews, the feedback he received was, those meetings that they had, daily check-ins, changed their lives for the better. It kept them alive and healthy through all that we were going through.
I believe it. I heard a McKinsey podcast a few months ago that talked about a team member who discovered that one of his, a leader, a manager who discovered his team member had been alone for 6 months, no human contact.
Wow.
And when he learned that, he said, okay, get your things together. Get in the car, go to your closest relatives, tell them you're coming and stay there for at least a week. You're going to take some time off. Don't get online. You need to reconnect. That was just such a profound story for me. You know, we are sentient beings. Yeah. We need human contact. For her to have gone through that was just heartbreaking. And I'm sure that's hardly an isolated case.
Yeah, it goes to something bigger, and it's this whole work-life balance. And when I say that, I don't mean time, I mean emotionally.
That's right.
If you're hurting at home or outside of work, that's going to carry over to your work and vice versa.
That's right.
What I appreciate about that story is that manager recognized that there's a member of the team who is suffering and we need to help her. You know, it's part of being human.
It is. We have to get back to our humanity.
My thanks to Jenny Clark. If you'd like to learn more about Jenny, go to the show notes. And thank you for listening. This is Gary DePaul. Until next time, lead on.